In this week's episode, the Grills talk about the art and healing of modern shamanism with special guest, Hannibal. Cue the music.
Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome to Geek Grills, a podcast about geeky things hosted by women. I'm September, also known as 9 of 12, and I'm here with my co-hosts, The Jen.
Hello.
And Chris, also known as Lunescence. Today our guest is a magician, a motivational speaker, a busker, Renfair performer, poet, and wears other hats I'm probably just forgetting to list. Today we welcome Hannibal.
Hello, everyone.
So, Grills and guest, what have you been up to this week?
This is the busy week of the year. This is holiday parties and corporate thank yous. And I've been working some with the USO and then writing at home and creating a new show for the spring.
That's a lot of stuff.
I'm thinking a magic show, magician. It is a card show based on the play of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh, that's neat.
So there will be card tricks and sword fighting and poetry and love stories and all kinds of stuff tagged into my little magic show. Probably an opening act. I like to support local artists wherever I four-wall a show. And so I'll generally have an opening act or two just to showcase other people's talents, give them a place to do their thing.
So I have been playing lots of World of Warcraft, as we can all expect from my obsession over this expansion. I have been building my D&D character, which has been super fun, and trying to think about what I'm going to play in that universe. And then I've been watching a lot of Law & Order SVU. And I don't know if that is good for me or not. It's definitely dark and sad, and I don't know, but it's also been, I don't know, it's been, I don't know why I've been just on this kick to watch it. I guess maybe I started it and then I felt like I had to finish it, so I've literally watched like 4 seasons of Law & Order SVU over the last week and a half. It's a little crazy. It's an alright show. So that is what I have been up to.
Well, you sound like your perky self. It's not getting you down too badly, I guess.
Yeah, right?
I have been up to taking tests and finals and not having any internet. So it's been lovely.
But it's back now.
And by lovely, you mean awful, horrible, and oh my god, what do you do without internet? I don't even know. I don't even know what you did without internet.
I slept a lot.
Oh my god.
I wept quietly to
that
myself.
That too.
Yeah, basically.
Oh. Well, I went to see Rogue One. I liked it. It inspired me to come home and watch A New Hope. And it did the same for my youngest, which is kind of cool. I mean, they had seen them before, but, you know, they really liked this one. I've been playing the new Pokemon Go holiday event stuff. They're getting little Pikachus with Santa hats on them. And I found out that they do evolve into Raichu with hats. But, you know, first I got to catch enough of them. So they don't pop around here all that much. Been going, spending time in Dill's stream at night for the 12 Dills of Christmas, which has been a fantastic time. And yes. I've been trying to fix my bathroom spigots. One of them got stuck on, and I had to take it apart to shut it off. And now I'm just trying to replace the spigots, and I can't get one of the handles off, and I bought a special tool to do it, and that wasn't working either, and I just, yesterday as hell with it, I called my friend Bubba. Yes, I have a handyman. His name is actually Bubba.
Wow.
And he's supposed to come this afternoon and just do it. I'm like, I got the parts. I'm just paying you. I can't deal with this anymore because I'll start throwing things. Failing at the plumbing.
It's okay.
At least it's not the sewer system that's backed up. That would really suck.
Oh, that's true. Oh, God.
Yeah, the last serious plumbing issue we had here ended up being this huge nightmare. It was like we had a leak under the house, and then the company that went under the house to fix it was like, nope, we're not fixing it. It's the wrong kind of pipes down there. We're not touching it. And there's asbestos, and there's all this nightmare. And then it also turned out that whoever hooked up our kitchen sink stuff had it just draining out under the house. It wasn't connected properly to go into the septic tank. So it was like this, we found out we had a biohazard under the house.
That's nuts.
So, it was pretty bad. Cost a couple $1,000 to get that straightened out, but. So this is relatively minor and will be over today and I can take a shower. So I guess it is time for the Geek Grapevine.
Oh my god, wireless earbuds. These are the Syllable D900 mini totally wireless Bluetooth earbuds. So I don't know if you guys are familiar, but Apple has been, they don't have an audio jack on the new iPhone. And now that's because they want you to use the earbuds. So what I liked about this is it's a competitor out there. This is the Syllable D900. And what's interesting is I thought that they would be crazy expensive, but they're actually only about $50 US on Amazon.
Nice.
Yeah. Isn't that kind of spendy though? Because, the best headphones you can really get are Skullcandies that are also $50.
Well, for earbuds, but I guess for the fact that they're Bluetooth and wireless and they're only $50, I guess I would have expected to pay $100 for these. That was where I assumed the price point would be. So I was a little bit surprised when I saw $50. Now, the other thing that's interesting is the battery life is one of the things that I find interesting is how long do they last? Because that's one of the big things. If you're going to have wireless headphones or earbuds, how long can you just pop them in and have them good for? And it does say that they're up to about 2.5 hours of continuous use, I believe is what it says.
That wouldn't last a shift at work.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. It's not going to be something that you do for consistent, but I don't know. It's
the Apple ones were like $160 or something, right?
Right. Yeah. The AirPods. Yeah. That sounds about right. And the cool thing is it's got the little charging case. So I think that's the other thing, too, is that the case holds a charge, too. So I think you can charge them up pretty quickly. So, maybe you can get a little bit more life out of them. But I do agree. It's not ideal for somebody who wants a big, long...
8 hours of listening to podcasts. But it'd be great for, a morning run or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. If you've got, a walk or a run or a jog, these are definitely going to be interesting. So I just thought it was interesting to look at one of the competitors out there. They seem really small. I mean, their size, they're really tiny. It's amazing to me how small they are. I feel like I would lose them, and that is why I will not buy them. But... still interesting. I just wanted to make sure I brought it up because there are so much talk about the AirPods these days.
And even those at the $160 price point, their battery life is purported to be about 5 hours. So still not a full shift. You might want to just go ahead and use the lightning to mic cable adapter that comes with your new fancy phone and just plug in for old school, long time listening.
I think it's annoying that you have to have a dongle. That really...
I am okay with fewer holes for crap to get in my phone. So,
yeah, but you feel like you want to charge and listen at the same time sometimes? I don't know.
I've been wanting to buy one of the bases you can just lay the phone on anyway. Ideally, I would like to do all charging without wires. Because the only problem I've ever had with my phone is, and my husband had the same thing, lint got in the lightning cable outlet. And you got to go in and have that removed.
Seriously, let's go back to the Nokia bricks that can be run over by PG&E trucks and still survive.
Right?
That also came my with AM FM radio.
Yeah.
An AM FM radio. I totally forgot about that. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yes. Awesome.
It's funny, at the pub last night, my friend Dennis just got a new phone, and he was trying to record something with it, and it's a flip phone, and this is his version of coming into, ooh, I've got a new modern toy. Phew. It's they still sell flip phones? I haven't seen one in a while.
I feel like they started doing it again. All right, news.
Okay, so there's finally new Pokemon in Pokemon Go, and lots of people are playing. It's not just me, I promise. So besides the Christmas event going on, Togepi and Pichu are hatching from eggs. This started just like, 4 or 5 days ago. And I haven't gotten it yet, but I did get a 10K egg the other day. So I'm working on it. I think I'm going to go for a walk today, even though it's really cold, and try and hatch this egg. And unfortunately, only from eggs. People are a little mad about that. Like, there's no new ones to catch yet. But we hope it's just a ramp up to the next, the second generation. We're hoping by the end of the month or maybe in January that'll launch.
So can I just say that I think Pichu is cuter than Pikachu, and I wish that my Pichu would just stay a Pichu forever.
Yeah, my husband's kind of like, oh, he's excited about the Pichu. So
what does it evolve into?
It's the before of Pikachu, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah.
So, but I think it's cuter because it's little and it's got just the ears are different. And I think it's cuter than Pikachu.
It is super cute. And Togepi is cute, but weird.
Yeah, he is a little weird. He's like, I'm on an egg. I don't know why that would be his voice. I feel like that wouldn't be his voice at all. Wow. All right. So, Hugh Jackman is going to be finishing his time as playing Wolverine in the Logan film. And I was really interested in this article here because it looks like Hugh Jackman wanted to make sure that the Logan film was R-rated. So he actually took a pay cut for it, which I really appreciate. I feel like that's a commitment to the art. I feel like if there's any story in the X-Men world that should definitely be rated R, you know, I don't want every movie to be rated R just because Deadpool is rated R and it did well. I do think that there's a time and a place for it, and I definitely feel like Old Man Logan and the Logan story are definitely the right place for that R rating. So I'm really glad that he pushed for that, and I think it's going to be a great way for Hugh Jackman to, you know, finish up his time as Wolverine. I think he's done a great job portraying the character and has brought a lot of the right... Like, when you think of Wolverine, I mean, I used to read the X-Men comics, and now I think of him. You know, he is Wolverine to me, so I think he's done an excellent job.
Yeah, I don't know how they can ever have someone else playing him. I just...
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be weird, but I am really excited that he was willing to do that. I think that's impressive. And I definitely...
Does it explain why he needs to take a pay cut just because it's going to be rated R?
So in order to secure the R rating, the total budget of the film had to go down.
Oh, okay.
So the director is the one that said that Jackman took the pay cut to help secure the R rating. So it was specifically... Okay. From his pay when they brought that budget down, that he it didn't say how much it lowered, but he did lower his pay enough to make the studio comfortable with the budget restriction. And I think part of that is because our movies do typically not make as much money as, you know, a PG-13, because obviously not as many people are eligible to even go see it. I think it's the right move, though. I think this story needs to be done with an R rating. And it's not just that I, you know, love R-rated material. It's just I feel like from a lover of this comic and remember my memory of reading it, it's the right thing for this story.
I mean, Logan is a really dark, gritty, difficult story. And I think at this point, trying to tell that end of the line story, it would have been... I can't imagine how it wouldn't be noticeable for him to be holding back from, you know, swearing or speaking plainly in these situations. Like, it would have been obvious. Like, for Logan to be go, oh, darn! You know, no.
Oh, darn, bub.
Right?
I remember how everybody, as everybody tends to do, was kind of up in arms when Hugh Jackman was first cast as Wolverine because Wolverine is a big, wide character. And that's because he's a drawing in a comic book and humans aren't typically that broad. And so he was technically kind of tiny for the role, but he pulled it off with attitude and with, the
hair
months and months. Yeah. The hair and the months and months and months of dedication to diet and exercise that he did to gain all the muscle. So he definitely pulled it off. And yeah, I definitely don't really see anybody else being Wolverine.
Now I just keep imagining him in those gold lamé pants from the Broadway show. But anyway.
There was a Broadway show for Wolverine?
No, not for Wolverine. It was a different role.
He's been really into Broadway, and that's where what everybody assumes he's going to do once he's done and kind of puts down the yellow jumpsuit for real. He is going to be really focusing on his Broadway career. I think that's where a lot of his passion is.
Awesome. Has he ever been in anything with Patrick Stewart? And like they
I
could
don't
take,
know.
They could take the X-Men cast.
I wonder if there has been any crossover.
Yeah, they could take the X-Men cast, go on Broadway, and not do X-Men stuff. That would be awesome. Because they're all theater guys.
Yeah.
That would be so cool.
That would be interesting.
It'd be cool that they did Shakespeare or something off Shakespeare, like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Yeah.
And have those guys in it.
That'd be really cool. Waiting for Godot.
Yeah. So what have you got for us here?
Well, since we were, since I thought we, well, so we're kind of talking about art and craft, in art a little bit. We've got an artist here who I would consider an artist as a magician. I almost said musician. If you might still be a musician. Do you play any instruments?
I don't.
You don't? Okay.
There's a story behind that if you've seen my show.
I have not seen your show, sadly.
I wanted to be a musician. That was my passion as a teenager coming up. And I fronted a few bands in that time, but I don't have the talent. I don't have the ability to play anything. I've tried and tried. I've rehearsed and practiced on several different things, and my hands just don't know how to do it.
Mm, yeah, it definitely takes a lot of time. But, you know, I would consider magic an art and an art form. So is, you know, motivational speaking and public speaking and all that kind of stuff. So since I had the internet yesterday for the first time in 2 weeks, I went crazy and tried to go on as many rabbit holes as I could. And I ended up finding last night this woman called, her name is Kay Pike, and she's a cos painter. So basically she cosplays on Twitch Creative. She draws comic book characters on her body. And then when she's done, she looks like a lifelike 2D creation. And, I had found this article on the New York Times, and then I went down a rabbit hole with that and found another, you know, like all of her videos and found out all about her stuff. And so I just thought that would be cool to bring up, you know, somebody else doing some really cool artwork, with their body and how it's just amazing the creativeness and in ingenuity that people have. I would definitely recommend you guys check out her videos. They're really cool.
Yeah, I've watched a little of that before. It's pretty stunning. Yeah. Visually to watch.
Like she's even able
to even think of that.
Like she's even able to she can cosplay or she can paint herself as super sexy Poison Ivy and then also paint herself as a male version of Superman. And she's able to visually make it so that it doesn't look like she has boobs when you look at her straight on. It's crazy.
So yeah, pretty nifty. Hey, so I guess that's it for the geeky news this week. So let's move on and talk with our guest. Now, I have seen Hannibal's show many, many times. First time I ever saw him was at a burlesque show. And I ended up on the stage, which happens to me a lot. And I just was stunned and an immediate fan. And
thank you.
Go to see him every time I get the opportunity. And I've learned a lot about his story, because it's not just standing there doing magic tricks. He tells a story with just about every show or several stories. You want to talk to us about your process or maybe how you came to deciding that this is how you were going to make a living? Because you were an accountant or something, right, Amber?
Or something, yeah. I did accounting. That's what I have a degree in at the insistence of my father. Did that for a little while, and we didn't get along, me and accounting, very much. I was doing a lot of local theater, and like I said, I was in a couple of bands just to be on stage, just to have my feet on stage. I got a job with a local, what do we call it? We'll call it a resort theme park. And they hired me to write scripts for family shows. And in one
like
of the
dinner theaters type thing, or
they would put on theatrical shows. They had theatrical space. They had stages and audiences, some of them outdoors, some of them indoors. And I would write and puppet stages, and I wrote scripts for their individual programming. We'd write a new script each week and then execute them. And in one of these programs, I wrote a street performer, street magician, into the script and learned a few card tricks to portray him. The resort job went away. In fact, the entire resort went away, and I was set without a job. And so while I was looking for something else, I thought, well, I know this street character that I played in this show might actually work. It might actually work to make some money while I'm looking. And so I went uptown in Charlotte and set up a table and started doing card tricks for people going by. And I was able to pay my grocery bills and keep the power on and everything with my little family. And I just never got another job. I kept doing card tricks.
Nice.
So
awesome. Yeah, I remember as a kid, I tried to get into magic and learning a little bit of sleight of hand with cards, and then learning about the fake thumb and how I definitely could not actually get a scarf in there and make it look real. but I bought, okay, you know, one of those little magic kits that I think are aimed for kids. So it was fun. And I just did it in front of myself, and it never like took off. I never went anywhere. I think I was too afraid to actually ever try it in front of anybody.
I can understand.
What was it like the first time you ever did anything in front of anybody? Were you super nervous that they were going to just see right through it, or that you might mess up?
Well, you got to understand, the first time I did it, the first time I played this character, it was just a character in a play.
Okay.
And so
that's a good safe.
Matter.
Yeah, that's a good safe environment to do that. That's
even
cool.
If they didn't, even if they saw through it, it was, you know, it wasn't me. It was this other guy. And so nice. I kept that same mindset. And when I went uptown, I just thought, I can make them laugh. I know I can get the comedy in there. Even if the magic isn't great, I know I can give them a good experience. And what I found out was, apparently I just had a knack for card tricks. I just had a thing for it, because it surprised no one more than me when I actually fooled people.
Nice.
You didn't see that? Seriously? Oh, great. No. Perfect. Yeah. That's how I meant it to look. Yes. And so,
I was just going to say, there is a lot of, I meant to do that, like, the attitude.
It's exactly how that's supposed to look. And so, no, I did, you know, I didn't, I was, I didn't take time to be nervous about it. I just thought, let me see what happens. And then off we went, you know.
That's fantastic.
You fool me. I mean, I've seen the same tricks over and over, and I'm just flabbergasted still.
There's a word I love. We don't get to use flabbergasted enough.
See, I feel like for me, I never had the dexterity. There's a certain amount of just fine manual dexterity that's involved that I just lack. I don't have that.
Do you play a musical instrument?
You know what the funny thing is? I did. I play bass guitar in college, but again, you know, that's like, out of all the musical instruments, it's probably one of the more, like, other than drums, it's not, you know, it's different. It's, you know.
Well, you're using different sets of muscles for the same, you know, for each
exactly.
thing. But there is a lot more fine dexterity in playing music. A lot of it in card tricks and in sleight of hand has a lot to do with rhythm, more than you'd expect. More so than the intricacies of sleight of hand or dexterity. There's a lot that has to do with rhythm and creativity.
Yeah, the storytelling, like I said, is such a strong part of your act. I mean, the keeping engaged, and I don't know how much it's meaning to distract, I guess, in some cases. Mm-hmm. But you can't help it. You have to look. And I know you practice a lot.
A lot.
Like, you wear cards out practicing, right?
Yes, I wear out at least one deck a day in rehearsal.
A day, really?
Wow.
Wow.
A day, yeah. I mean, when I sit down to rehearse and practice, it's a 3 or 4 hour process.
Nice.
Going over, you know, the material that I do, the stuff that I've written, as well as development of new ideas, or this just the search for new ideas. Takes a lot of intensive time, and I will wear out a regular deck of cards in 3 hours or so. It's just useless for anything after that.
So how many hours a day of practice is that?
At least 3, usually 4 or 5.
Cool. Yeah, that seems awesome. Reasonable. I think that's one of the things that, and sorry, Luna, I'll let you get to your point, but I think that's one of the things that's interesting is a lot of people think that musicians, artists, you know, magicians, you know, even comedians, I think that they just go on, do their show, and that's what they do. They don't think about how many hours of practice are going into that for them to stay sharp and good at what they do.
Right. Well, if you want to be a master of your craft, you've got to put the time in.
10,000 hours.
At least.
Yeah, I was going to ask, have you already done it, or have you considered ever going on Penn & Teller's Fool Us? Have you heard about that show? Or is that an inappropriate question?
No, it's not an inappropriate question. I have many friends that have been on the show that are part of the production team of that particular show. I'm not allowed to tell you at this point that I'm currently in the audition process. Ooh. For season 4. That's not something I'm allowed to reveal if in fact I was. And that we've been having meetings with the producers about exactly what part of my show might be appropriate for that show. But if it was to ever happen, I would find a way to subtly let you know that perhaps season 4 would feature Hannibal.
That's fantastic.
This makes me so happy. Yeah, because like this is something that I got to see Brian Brushwood on. I'm a fan of Brian Brushwood because I listen to Night Attack, and he's got a level of crass comedy that makes me very happy. And you know, I'm sure that you're probably familiar.
Yeah.
And I find it so fascinating. I really do. It's
what
it's
do you find fascinating?
It's the distraction and the way that I know that they're going to tell me something that's going to distract me, but I do, like Nine was saying, I do it anyway. I fall along with I get lulled into the whole drama of it, and I fall for it every time, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay.
It was like the part in your show where you are like, it's really, I'm just distracting you. This is how you do the trick. I just throw this up in the air and everybody looks up there. And look, some of you are still doing it. And like, you're making fun of people that are still, actually, they keep looking. And I mean, I don't keep following your hand up in the air as if you're throwing the ball like I'm a dog, but.
But you can see people who are.
Yes. Yes. But I'm still falling for the rest of the trick.
Right.
Every time.
And to be, you know, for full disclosure, I would never do that to a dog, just to an audience of humans.
Well, it just reminds me, because like you do that when you're a little kid, your dog, you like act like you're throwing a stick.
Right.
And they run.
And they come back to you looking at you like you've betrayed your trust. But how funny would it be to have an audience full of just dogs where you just pretend to throw a ball and watch them all follow it with their eyes? And then I think that'd be hilarious.
That would be a really good YouTube video.
I think you're right. I might have to put that together. Dogs at a magic show.
So back in 2006, that was a really good year for magical movies, as in magician movies, because we had both The Prestige and The Illusionist. Mm-hmm. Like when it comes to whenever I'm a violinist, so whenever I see a violinist in a TV show or a movie, I'm super critical of it because it's usually completely obviously faked. Do you feel that way with movies as well? And which one of those two movies is the better movie for being more authentic for magicians?
The Batman versus Wolverine movie was,
oh yeah. I love that movie so much. And it's okay if
Prestige.
If that wasn't like a good representation, but I loved that movie so much.
Both of them came very close in some aspects. Now, of course, it's a big fantasy, you know, written for a big screen. As far as authenticity, The Illusionists was a bit more authentic to the actual craft itself. Okay. But I thought The Prestige was a better story about magicians.
Cool.
Interesting.
And now you see it. No, let's just say no.
No, I know, but I did enjoy it. The first one.
Oh, sure.
It was a good story.
It was a good story. It was a very good story. And if I could get past being appalled at the way that my craft is represented, I would probably enjoy it a lot more.
That's fair.
Yeah. It's like someone making a movie about your parents.
Ooh.
And turning them into, you know, bank robbers or, yeah, you know, or wicked people. It just, you know, there's a certain amount of deception that goes along with what I do, of course, but to stretch it in that direction, it was I'm not going to use the word that I can't think of. I wasn't offended, but it was just kind of, you know, come on. You could do better than that. You could make these
enough to be off-putting. So how did I noticed that watching you and being a fan and stuff that the magicians, you do have a community. Like, I didn't know, like, that magazine you're on the cover of, Genie, has been around for how long?
Genie is 86 years old. It is the longest continuous running periodical for magicians. It is published all over the world, and it's held its position for a very long time. Just great publishing quality and care about this particular craft. And I was on the June issue of this year. They found me fascinating and worth delving into, which was a huge honor.
Cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
They did a 15-page story about me, and in the entire 15-page story, they barely talk about the magic that I do. They talk more about me and how I came up and my philosophy and theories on the craft itself rather than my show, which was also fairly fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's probably, you don't get to talk about that aspect of it very often. I mean, how did busking out in the street in Charlotte turn into a magician doing motivational speaking and the TED talk you did? And like, how did that shift happen?
Of course, it was a very long process. I've been doing this for 24 years now. But I was working on the street and I picked a location where people were leaving. There was a traffic pattern of people going from their hotel to where the major food places are. And I put myself right between those things. And where the crowd was is where I wanted to pick up. So the restaurants noticed, or they started hearing about it, and they would come out to see it. Some of the managers, some of the owners came out, and they'd bring me food because I was enhancing their business. And if I was there for several hours, they'd bring me water, or they'd bring me, you know, food or something. And just as a kind of a nudge, hey, if anybody asks, you know, what's good to eat, you could point them towards us, maybe, you know. So I became this kind of impromptu pitch man if anybody was asking me questions. One of them invited me to come in and work behind the bar when it's raining or when it gets cold or when you just can't work on the street. Why don't we pick a couple of nights and you come inside and you work the bar and maybe some of the bar tables and we'll, you know, you'll be a feature for us. And that turned out really well. So I picked several different restaurants throughout the city and pitched the idea to them. And at one point I was doing 7 nights a week at different venues.
Oh man, I'm glad I didn't find you then.
Yeah.
I've been drinking way too much.
And, you know, it promoted their business. It gave them something to do. And after doing it for a couple of years, I started realizing that the people that I saw on a regular basis were starting to hire me for their parties, starting to hire me for their in-home things. And so I thought about, where do I really want to work? So I edited the restaurants I was working at to do more of a corporate clientele. More the people that had money that could hire me for higher end parties or hire me for seminars or whatever, just as an entertainment break. And at one of those, in building this little ladder that I built, one of my clients sat me down and said, you know, you've got a really fascinating story of where you came from and some of the people you've met and how you got here. Why don't you, we're doing a motivational seminar like in a couple of months over the course of a few days. Why don't we give you an hour just to talk about that? And so that's kind of the Reader's Digest version of how I started doing motivational stuff. Apparently most people don't live the life that I've lived. And I've worked hard, of course, but I've been very lucky in being in the right place at the right time and in discovering what my abilities were.
Yeah. As a professional custodian, I can definitely say you don't live the life most people live.
But I believe we all have abilities, and I believe we all have a way to tap into them and not only better our own lives, but reach out to other people and better theirs. You know, we share a lot of experiences and just.
Yeah, I see a lot of the charity type venues that you play, USO there's a particular children's.
Yeah, the MDA.
Yeah.
The Muscular Dystrophy Association. I do one kid show a year. I don't have an appropriate show for children, as you might have seen.
yeah, mostly not.
Mostly not. But I do one kid show a year, and it's for the summer camp for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And these are I've been doing it for, man, over 10 years. And I've seen these kids come in and then watch them. There's a lot that goes into muscular dystrophy, but I've seen them come and go, and it's broken my heart quite a few times. But it's something I just feel really strongly about, and they really love me and what I'm able to do for them.
Well, no doubt. I mean, yeah, belief and magic and suspending it, you know, in those moments has to be just so incredibly valuable.
I feel like that's a huge component of the beauty of art in general. Just the fact that it can, you know, sometimes, like you said, you're not going to cure what's going on, but giving that moment of humor and entertainment and something, I don't want to belittle it by using the word distraction, but, you know, especially with the USO, same thing, where it's just something that is redirecting attention in a positive way.
Redirecting. You want a little soapboxing?
Yes, soapbox away.
Yeah, definitely.
So what we do as artists, and everyone does some form of art, some kind of creative process. We're creative beings. We are made to make something, and that might be cooking, it might be caring for people. There's a big wide wave there. We went through recently a really horrific political swing, and a few of my artist friends were lamenting some things about, you know, we tried with our art, we tried to block what actually happened with our art, and it did no good at all. We were useless. And I gotta really disagree in that sentiment. Going back to, and this is just me because I'm a history buff, there was a gentleman called Peter Cook who wrote about, there were a lot of satirical clubs in the 30s trying to prevent the rise of Hitler. And obviously he rose to power anyway. Kurt Vonnegut wrote a lot about the Vietnam War and art artists and tons of musicians and lots of protests with artists failed to shorten it. But the point of doing art isn't so, I mean, yes, if we can stop something, if we can change something, if we can redirect something, if we can heal something, then by all means, great, we've done that. But the more important aspect of what if they hadn't been there? What if we didn't have satirists and comedians and musicians and magicians in today's political climate? How bleak would the outlook be right now? We have wonderful people that allow us to laugh at the absolute tragedy that's happening around us. And that in and of itself, it makes it worthwhile, because otherwise we're just living in this ugly gray landscape, you know?
It keeps us from losing hope, I believe.
Yes, exactly.
Amen to that. It's why I get that kind of sentiment is why I get absolutely furious on the inside whenever I hear somebody say, oh, you got a fine arts degree? Well, that was a waste of money. Oh, you got a philosophy degree? What a waste of time. I hate that kind of thing, because we need artists. Otherwise,
it's vinyl.
Yeah. Otherwise, life wouldn't be worth living.
I feel like it's one of the things that makes the difference between, you know, I always tell people, it's like, it's not just about surviving. It's about getting to a place where you can thrive. And art is one of those things that art and culture are what get you from that point of just day in, day out to, you know, that greater place. And again, I get a little bit maybe metaphysical with some of that. If I wanted to, I could go there. But it is. It's a difference between just living life and really experiencing life.
It gives you a reason to live. It gives you beauty to live for.
Exactly.
And communicate ideas. I mean,
you need to find inspiration somewhere when you're wandering lost. And art can be those signposts.
And I do card tricks. So that's what I do.
Well, the cards are your instrument.
Exactly. That's everything.
And also your stories. I love the elf boot. Finally got to see that at the Ren Fair this year. Thank you for taking my request for a trick that I'd heard about and not seen.
Apparently I need to do it more often. It's getting a reputation all on its own. So I'm glad
it's got a good message. So we had a little more time here. I want you to tell us, if you will, about The Naked Truth and how that happened. That show is so profound. I took a friend and she just cried, and then on the way out the door, took all the money, cash she had left in her purse, and like gave more from, because it was a pay what you want when we came in.
Right.
It just really, really affected her so strongly. And I know you're doing it again in January. And yes. I have other friends who just word of mouth got around here, and there's probably going to be like a little Statesville contingent coming up to see it. I don't know if I can handle it again.
I don't know if you can handle it again.
Well, it's harder to watch you. Like, I feel so much empathy. Like, I'm just like, no, what are you doing? That's going to hurt tomorrow. Like, anyway, if you want to tell everyone what the show is.
Okay. So the idea got sparked a few years ago reading Amanda Palmer's The Art of Asking. And she described a few things that she did in her club days when she was playing the clubs. And as a musician, she was playing the clubs. And I got this idea because I've been struggling for a long time with my own self-image and my place in art and in magic and the friction that I was causing. And there was a lot of personal friction going on at the time with my marriage. And it left me very self-loathing. Let's just go there. So I thought up this idea, and I went to some very close, trusted friends and a couple of my creative team, magician-wise, and said, so I want to do my regular magic show, and then I want to do this thing. I want to do this extra after-show kind of a moment. What do you think? And all of them told me it was a horrible idea and it would hurt badly and I shouldn't do it. But it was the most amazing thing they'd ever heard of, so I probably should. So my idea gained full shape in doing some research on shamanism and sin eating, a group that was known as sin eaters. And basically, it's ancient, it's tribal, it precedes Catholicism and everything else that comes with it. But there would be a medicine man, a shaman, or a crone in the village who would, if you had problems, if you had issues with yourself, you could come and bring her a talisman and she would accept your sin or your self-loathing, for example, onto herself, and you could walk away without it. You had to promise to give it up if you actually gave it up. So what my thing was, here's what's going to happen. I have two major, major issues. The first is, my body image and how I see myself. I'm not pleased with the shape of my physical self. And that was cemented a bit at home. The other one is, oddly enough, I don't like being in crowds. I can stand up on stage in front of thousands of people and be great. I can sit down with 15 or 20 people at a table and perform for them and hold conversation with them if I'm performing. But if I'm just in a situation where I'm in the midst of people, I cannot handle it. It becomes very claustrophobic. It becomes very anxiety prone, and I'm ready to be away. So I combine those two things, and I do my regular show. I take a short break and tell them that there's going to be something very, very intense, not funny at all. I hope they enjoyed what they saw. And if they don't want to experience something that is going to be moving, you know, in possibly a negative direction, they could go ahead and leave. I don't want to spring this on anyone's surprise. So I go into a very long caveat before I go. So I take a few minutes, let people that want to leave, leave, and I come back out.
Needs like an emotional trigger warning.
Yeah. Yeah. It's needed with this. I explain exactly what I just explained to you about my own images, and what I'm going to do. And what I do is I strip and I pass out Sharpies to the audience. And if you have a word, that burns you, if you have something inside your head, somebody at some point has said something to you that still hurts you and you're still carrying around and it's unhealthy for you, come up and write it on me. Surround me with people, touch me, write your word on my skin, and promise to leave it. Now, I'm not woo enough to think that I can take it away forever, because I can't. It's impossible for you to not give it to me permanently. You can't do that. It just doesn't work that way. But you can promise to leave it alone for a couple of days. You know, give it 24 hours. Give it through the end of the weekend. Promise to just let it go and let me carry it for as long as you are physically possible, and get that feeling of release. So I do that, and they write all kinds of horrible, heinous things on me, and let it go. And I leave it on for a few days just to keep my end of the promise.
Wow.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's
intense.
Right?
It's very intense.
It's amazingly moving to watch and to experience. And I'm interested to see the words people write. It's like the energy of the show takes on its own life. And it's like people hear something different and they want to write something, and it draws it out of them. And sometimes I've seen that people write something on you that's just more, it's like, you didn't follow directions. This is inspired. It's like, okay, they weren't following directions, but they were moved to do something.
And that's fine. That's quite all right. Some of them will leave messages to me. They'll write on me somewhere, thank you for doing this, or I feel you and I'm here for you, and things like that, which is great. That's awesome. If that's where you feel moved to do, then go ahead and do that too. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting to just see everyone's different reactions to it. And yeah, people feel your pain too. I worry, after seeing that show, I just, oh, how can you carry that around? It's so, so heavy. But I hope that there are enough of us also watching that take it with us and are there for you.
Yes. I make sure I have at least a friend or two backstage, and there's a meditative process I go through afterwards. But it is very heavy for the first couple of days.
Oh, man.
Very heavy.
Like, I thought show drop was bad. I mean, that's a huge show drop.
it's art and it's healing, and it does, it's done some real good for people. And that, what more could you ask?
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's very, very cool.
And I thank you for it. How many times have you done it now? It's only been a couple, right?
Six. This will be number seven coming up here. I did it a few times. I've done it a few times in Hollywood. I work at the Magic Castle in Hollywood a couple of times a year. And one of the burlesque shows out there, well, actually the burlesque show out there, Monday Night Tees, is run by a good friend of mine, Lily von Stupp. And she requested that I do that after one of her burlesque shows. And we did it twice, and it's gone over huge. It's a very different feel in Hollywood. I'm not going to say it was more intense, because it was just a different feelings, but nobody in the audience knew me, except for, one or two people that were performing that night. So this was an entire room full of strangers who had never seen my magic show ever before. And so they got a little taste of that during the burlesque show. But then to follow that up with the Naked Truth, they weren't expecting it. They didn't know me at all. And so it hit them in a very different way. So
wow.
I'm committed to doing this as often as I'm able to handle it.
Yeah, I'm really impressed by this. I didn't really know about this aspect, and I think it's really awesome that you do that, and I think it's that's really powerful. That's a really powerful thing to do. So, wow. Yeah, I really enjoyed hearing about, you know, getting this taste of your journey and what motivates you and the passion behind your artistry, because I think it's definitely inspiring. It really, really is.
And if you'll watch the TEDx link, we'll put that in the show notes for our listeners. That is the consistent message that Hannibal hands people every time I see him is, you know, these cards, I found my instrument. What's yours? You have one. Find it. It can be really uplifting when you're just feeling useless. To keep looking and to keep on. And he's, you know, this deck of cards is taking me around the world. And it's right. Very inspiring.
I want to not just, I don't want to leave it on the stage. I want people to take something home with them, you know? So that's what I strive for anyway.
I think you do a fantastic job.
Okay. Tommy. I feel like I brought the room down somehow.
No, you didn't. It's not, you know, and there's a moment, there's time for that, though. You know, I think it's one of those things here in the U.S., and maybe this is me soapboxing a little bit, but everybody's like, instant gratification, happy all the time, blah, 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 blah. Everything is just this light, surface-level bullshit. Like, oh, this thing happened. I posted it on Facebook. Oh, look, it got likes. Oh, yay, next thing. I don't think it brings the room down as much as it gets us to a place of more authenticity in our experiences. It's not just, it's not, yeah, it's okay to have those moments of just saying, wow, that's powerful. And that's not bringing the room down at all. I think it's just having a more authentic existence. That's my opinion.
Well, and I mean, we listen to podcasts. We like to hear people telling stories instead of just listening to the same songs over and over again. I think it's like, people who listen to a lot of podcasts also listen to a lot of NPR. I think there's, you know, we can't let the art of storytelling be lost in any respect. So
no, not a bit.
Okay, so I think we are ready to move on. I want to thank Hannibal very, very much for being here and talking to us about his art and for the healing he's given me every time I see him. And
welcome.
Great gratitude.
I just posted it, or I put up in the chat there, a link to the very first time I did it.
Oh, cool. Okay.
That I wrote, and then there's a link to the pictures from the words and stuff from the aftermath, too.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
We'll make sure to share that. That'll be really fantastic. So, you know, I was feeling pretty good about how we were going to intimidate you with our grilling segment. But
and now it seems like silly, right?
And this ain't going to be no thing. So yeah, so we're going to grill you now. So
ready? Yes.
Yeah. Let's get you.
Actually, I do have a quick question.
Oh yeah. Go.
This is probably one of those really stupid questions where, like, if you meet, you meet a comedian and you're like, hey, do you know all of the comedians? But do you know a lot of other magicians?
Yes.
Do you know?
I know an excessive amount of magicians. I know more magicians than I want to know.
Okay. Do you know, have you met Matt Dillahunty or Eli Bosnick?
No.
Okay. I was just curious.
I don't know either.
Okay.
That's okay. It's a community of us, and we're wide ranged and diverse. I know hundreds and hundreds.
I bet.
But those two I don't.
Okay.
But
yeah, I was just curious. One of them does it more professionally than the other. I think the other one is kind of more of a hobbyist. So.
Gotcha.
Can you imagine being like in the same hotel with a magician's convention?
That would be awesome.
Oh, I could tell you hours and hours of stories about that.
Okay, let's go have coffee.
Oh boy.
Let's go. Help me get to the airport.
Right? Yeah, let's talk. No. All right, so we're going to grill you. So what's going to happen is I'm going to fire questions at you, and you're going to answer them with the first thing that comes to mind. So are you ready?
Yes. Is that the first question?
Yes, that was the first question.
Yes.
The second question is, all right, what is your favorite color?
Green.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Rock star.
Oh, yeah, nice. If you could choose to stay a certain age forever, what age would it be?
Wow. 35.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. What was the first thing you remember buying with your own money?
Movie tickets.
Nice. What's the best gift you've ever received?
Just, are we talking metaphysical here? My ability?
No, like if you remember getting a present that you thought was awesome.
Best present I ever got. Wow, I'm totally coming up blank.
How about the worst present you ever received?
Again. Man. Okay, the best gift, and this is going to sound, well, heck with it, it's the first thing I came up with. The best gift I ever received was a magic wand from a woodcrafter who saw my act and put together this extremely rare, there were rare woods, rare ivories and gold and everything that he put together. Specifically, because he loved my act and brought it to me as a gift at a show. And I use it every single show.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So if there was an autobiographical film made of you, who would play you in that movie?
Do they have to be living?
No.
Orson Welles.
Nice. And who would write the soundtrack to that movie if you had to choose one musician?
The band Marillion would write the soundtrack to my life.
Nice.
Because they already
have. And what would it be called? What would that movie be called?
I Hope There's Love Where You Are.
Nice. And finally, if you could meet anyone living or dead, who would you choose to hang out with?
The living one.
Winner!
Congratulations, you have just been grilled. Well done.
Thank you.
Oh, that's the best answer I've ever heard to that, by the way.
Thanks. Did you
I feel like we're all winners, by the way, because of that.
But I so wanted you to say Jack Black.
Oh, but I've done that. I've hung out with Jack Black, so.
No, I mean for the music.
Oh, okay. He could do that too. Tenacious D would make an interesting soundtrack to my life story.
He already did. Like, he's got that song, Lee, fucking Lee. That's my maiden name. And what I'm going back to is Lee, so I'm excited about that.
Nice.
Gosh, that was awesome.
The Kyle Gas Band's coming to town.
I'm sorry? That's a question.
The Kyle Gas Band is coming to town. It is gas, right? Not glass.
Okay. Yeah.
From cool. Tenacious D.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I'm like, wait, what? Oh, yeah. You're like, I'm like, where's the thread? I'm trying to find it.
It's there.
Oh, gosh. Loon, it's so good to hear your voice. Seriously, can you stop not having internet?
Yeah. Would you like to talk to my freaking landlords? At least now. I missed Taco, which was my birthday present to myself, since it was originally going to happen the day before my birthday. And then I missed losing – I missed losing to Big K for DHL, because I was going to lose that anyway. But it sucks that I didn't actually just at least get to play.
I didn't get to lose.
Yeah, I didn't get to lose by trying to just have fun. But at least the good thing with whatever internet they have right now, I don't know, because previously it was Cable One. I don't know what it is right now, but it now includes 5 gigahertz band. So the internet is faster and stronger, has a stronger signal.
Awesome.
So that's
hooray. So if nothing else, good things came of this. Mm-hmm. Oh boy. Hopefully.
Now you can make up for it and just game harder.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Right? Yeah, exactly.
So what are you most anticipating right now, folks? Loon, you go first.
I know.
I know you got a big list because you have internet.
For me, yeah, just like it's getting really close to the end of the year. So now that I have internet, I can finally like start going towards getting plans finalized and getting shit together so that 2017 becomes 1,000 times better than what 2016 was. Not that that's going to be hard, because 2016 was pretty shitty year. So, you know, good riddance. Bye, 2016. Don't let me kick you in the ass on the way out.
Right? Screw you, 2016.
Such a dumb year. But the...
Can we do a 2016 nail in the coffin party on, like, New Year's?
Like,
we'll just, like, call it,
no
like...
No kidding.
Put it to rest.
Like, even John Oliver had a segment about how shitty 2016 has been. But there is registration for Will Act for Food just opened up for me yesterday, and I signed up. I got my ticket, my participation ticket. So what Will Act for Food is, it's a 24-hour play festival that happens annually, and 100% of the proceeds go to our local food bank, the Idaho Food Bank. And so it's $15 to participate, and it's $15 to go to the show. And typically we'll have about 50 actors that'll join, about 8 writers, 8 directors. And so what happens is 8 10-minute plays get written, and actors are randomly drawn along with a line that has to be included in the play and a prop that has to be put in the play. And then the category of the play, or the genre of the play, will be randomized as well. So like for the genre, like comedy, suspense, romance, that kind of thing. And
okay, so kind of like improv, names from a hat.
Well, it's not improv. So what happens after all of the genres of the plays are given out, the writer of the play, the screenwriter, the playwriter will go and write the play for about 8 hours, and then we convene again that same day, and we get randomly assigned to a director to a play. And then for the next 24 hours, we rehearse. Well, for the next like 8 hours or so, we rehearse a little bit, 10 hours or whatever. We rehearse. And then that night we perform everything. And so this is something I've done every year. Yeah. And so that's, the performances are going to be at the end of January on the 28th. So I'm super stoked about that. I will probably have a ton of pictures on Twitter.
Awesome.
We look forward to those.
That's awesome. So I am excited to finally go see Rogue One so that I can spoil it for everybody else later. No, I'm just kidding. So I am excited to hopefully get to see Rogue One this weekend. I've got a game tomorrow, D&D. That's going to be fun. And then I am preparing for the Diamond Club New Year's Eve stream. So they're doing a New Year's Eve stream, Diamond Club peeps. And I have selected or been given a time slot in their 24-hour New Year's Eve stream. So I don't know. At this point, I think I'm following up Coverville, which is Brian Ibbett. But I will, when I know for sure exactly what time slot I have, I'll let people know. But that's going to be really fun. So I'm going to try to come up with something fun to do for my hour of the 24-hour New Year's Eve stream. So hooray.
Right on. How about you, Hannibal?
Closing out the end of the year, all the holiday shows are finishing up in the next couple of days. The main thing I'm focusing on right now is January 17th at Petra's, The Liar and the Naked Truth.
Amazing.
Awesome.
I'm planning for my party. It's our 17th anniversary on the 21st, my husband and I. And
congratulations.
Thank you. So we're going to be celebrating that and the solstice with welcoming any friends who don't have places to go, although it's going to be Christmas Eve. It's going to be on the 23rd. You are invited, Hannibal. I hope you can make it out. I'll be picking up a case of champagne today. I've done that in the past. I like to get champagne, and I get the same brand that we had at our wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And usually a little pomegranate liqueur to drop in that.
That's Christmas Adam, right?
That's exactly what my husband said.
Christmas Adam comes before Eve and is generally less satisfying.
There. Oh my God. Wow.
Yep, you'll fit right in.
Boy. You're my hero right now. Oh my gosh. This makes me so happy. All right.
We decorate. Nope. It's all good. We decorate the tree usually at the party because I have traditionally waited, and we decorate on usually the solstice, with ornaments. A lot of them were given to us at our wedding instead of wedding gifts. And last year we were having a hell of a time getting the angel on the tree because the tree is too tall, too close to the ceiling. So I've got like Scott, my gay husband, and Ryan, who's like this giant, and everybody is gathered around the tree, and we got some twine. And so it was like the bondage angel. We're like tying the angel onto the top of the tree.
It's your Shibari angel. That's amazing.
It was pretty great. So anyway, that promises to be a good time. I'm looking forward to it. I need as many RSVPs as possible ahead of time, so I need to know if I need to rent a flat of champagne flutes or if I have enough.
Oh my gosh. That sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Hooray.
I wish you could come. Oh, the grills could come. It would be so great.
I know, right? Can we get that teleportation system just figured out? We'll be all set.
Oh, man. We could get in some trouble. All right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, dudes and grills that have been enjoying our show, remember that if you have even a dollar to spare, please help support us at patreon.com/grills. It helps us continue to produce the show. I want to say thank you to all of our patrons. Again, 2016 has been total crap except for this project got started, and that's one of the great things that has happened this year. It is really meaningful to me and the grills, and in the I might be getting a little emotional because we're getting into the holiday season. My birthday just passed, so I'm all emotional. But we would love to have more patrons with us. Our Slack channel is getting more and more active, and that's very exciting too. So we have some codes to give away for the next few listeners that sign up on Patreon. So there are Patreons. There's a few game codes that are available. Check out geekgrills.com. And again, you can support us at patreon.com/grills.
I would love to see more iTunes reviews. We only have two. We're on episode 28, and both those reviews are really good, and I hope that you, our listeners, are enjoying the show and telling your friends about it. And if you can pop over to iTunes and leave a review, it helps us gain a higher spot in the searches and helps more people find us. So we really appreciate those as well. Well, where can you be found on the interwebs? Loon?
Easiest place to find me is on Twitter at Chris Van Pelton. That's Chris with a K.
How's about you, Jen?
I can be found at The Jen Says on Twitter, and you can like my Facebook page at facebook.com/TheJenPlays.
And our esteemed guest, Hannibal, where can folks find you and your material?
Esteemed guest. The best place is themagicartist.com. And that has links to all the socials, all the Facebook, Twitters, and YouTubes, and all the stuff you want to see.
Super terrific, and I recommend everyone follow him. It is really good to see his posts very often, just reminding you, like, that there is love where you are. I can be reached at 9of12, that's NINEOF12 on Twitter, and you can hear me on the Part-Time Gamers podcast bi-weekly. Thanks for listening, everyone. Good game.
Good game.
GG.
Good game.
If you enjoyed the show and have the quill skill to shriek speech, leave us a 5-star unique critique on iTunes or thrill us with the size of your handbill by spilling goodwill into our tills at patreon.com/grills. We can also be found windmilling around Facebook and YouTube at facebook.com/geekgrills and youtube.com/geekgrills, where we like to chill. Tweet your siren songs where the throngs belong on Twitter at geekgrills, where we're dressed to kill. For more info on the show, though, go to geekgrills.com, where you can find previous episodes, show notes, and current contest information. Send us your psalms and qualms to geekgrills@gmail.com or give us a ring at 508-474-5577, where we can hear your lovely voice sing the zing thing. Thanks for listening.